the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Fred Astaire had many dancing partners, although he's most famous for his films with Ginger Rogers. After his films with Ginger, he was very reluctant to be teamed again, and he never made more than two films with any other dancer. Perhaps Astaire's reluctance to be part of a team is the result of his struggles to remain a star after his split with his first partner. Fred Astaire danced for 27 years with his sister Adele. Fred and Adele Astaire were stars in vaudeville, on the Broadway stage, and in London. Their teaming was the stuff of a legend. My guest, theater historian Kathleen Riley, has brilliantly captured their career and brought it to life again in the pages of her book, The Astaires, Fred and Adele. Kathleen Riley, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very much, Gary. Great pleasure.
How much of the Astaire that we know and love from his films would we see if we were in the audience of a Fred and Adele Astaire show? I mean, we sort of think of Fred Astaire as very romantic, and it seems hard to be romantic if he were dancing with his sister.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, once they became very well known as brother and sister, they danced largely in a comedic vein. They were more eccentric dancers, specialty dancers, and they had a lot of wonderful comic routines. And I think that certainly endured in Fred's film career. He had a wonderful capacity for comedy, for wit, even in a little degree, slapstick. And but of course, he, towards the end of his stage career, after Adele had left, that's when he became more known as a romantic dancer and leading man.
Now, in your book, The Astaires, you characterize Fred as being sort of the straight man of the act, or kind of Adele was the star, essentially.
Yes, absolutely. She was the natural clown, really. She just lit up any room she walked into and certainly any stage she was on. And he learned quite quickly that rather than be resentful of that in any way, it was better to play to his strengths and stand in the background a bit and let Adele do her thing. But he was certainly being noticed as well for a subtle comedy style and a talent even for improvisation, which is quite extraordinary when you think of what a perfectionist he was, that he loved rehearsal, which Adele certainly didn't. But she was very much the shining light and the one who caught the lion's share of the critics' attention, and audiences just loved her.
Well, you know, I don't think there are any of the women that danced with Astaire in his movies, maybe Rita Hayworth, who were really his equal. I mean, he always is the one, but he, of course, he has this way of showcasing them as he dances. But what about Adele? Was she as good a dancer as Fred, a better dancer than Fred?
Well, she was regarded as something of a child prodigy. They were born in Omaha, Nebraska, and spent their first few years there, and it was there that they began dancing. Adele was enrolled in the local dancing school and showed a great deal of potential, and her teacher thought she should go to New York and be trained properly for the stage. And Fred really just went along for the ride, but very early on he showed promise too, of course. But she was very much a natural talent. I think obviously he was too, but he felt he had to work at it more, things didn't come as easily to him, perhaps.
Thus his reliance on rehearsal.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
So Adele didn't like to rehearse, but also didn't necessarily need to rehearse as much?
Well, she could probably get away with things a bit more, and it would perhaps only be noticed by Fred and not the audience. So, but she definitely hated to rehearse. She hated the grind of the theater.
Well, again, back to Fred Astaire's movies. You know, his dances are, you know, pretty acrobatic. Not to the degree that, say, Gene Kelly's dances were, but, you know, he sometimes danced over chairs and tables and so forth. Was Fred and Adele's dancing acrobatic?
Well, they were known very much for their speed and the intricacy of their steps. So it was quite athletic, and they used to do a thing, their signature dance was something called the runaround, which just involved them running around and around the stage in ever-widening circles and getting faster and faster, and the audiences loved this. But I think certainly all dancers have to take risks to a certain degree, and they had a number of falls on stage. One thing they did, which was quite dangerous, they had to dance on top of a banqueting table, which was held aloft by chorus boys. And during rehearsal, they were always sliding off and crashing to the ground. And this would occasionally happen in performance, too, that they would take spills. But they were very well rehearsed and very athletic themselves.
Never a serious injury.
No.
Yeah.
Trouble may harm us, shadows around us, never mind, my dear. Don't be downhearted when we get started, they will disappear. Listen to brother, while we meet each other, there's no need to fear. For like Hansel and Gretel, we will prove our mettle. If you'll hang on to me, while I hang on to you, we'll dance into the sunshine, out of the rain, forever and a day.
Called The Astaires, Fred and Adele, and it's a marvelous book. I really, really loved it. Tell us a little bit about how the evolution of their act. When they started performing together, they were just children.
Yes, they were very young. When they went to New York, Fred was barely five, and Adele, who was 2.5 years older, so seven and a half. And their first engagement, they were enrolled in a stage school in New York and got their first professional engagement very quickly at a sort of end of the pier theater in Keyport, New Jersey. And they spent probably 12 years in vaudeville honing three basic routines all that time, which was undoubtedly the genesis of Fred's perfectionism. And they did something to begin with called the Wedding Cake Act, where they would dance up and down two enormous wedding cakes that lit up and played music and did all sorts of things. And that was the first time Fred wore top hat and tails. And the top hat was partly to make him appear a bit taller on stage because for a long time he was shorter than Adele until he hit puberty. And in fact, they had to take 2 years off from performing while he caught up in height at one point.
Well, he was never very tall, was he?
No, he was probably just the right size for a dancer. He was about 5'9", and very slight, of course, but quite wiry and strong. And in fact, it was because he was such a frail little boy to begin with that his mother thought, well, it would be a good idea to enroll him in dancing school too, and it might help to build him up physically.
And I guess vaudeville allowed people, because of the nature of vaudeville, to do the same act over and over again for a period of years without without the audiences saying, hey, we've seen this, because you'd go from town to town and play to such a, relatively small audience when you think about how many people saw Fred Astaire's television special in 1959.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it was George Burns that said vaudeville was a great place to be bad in. You know, you could spend a lot of years just perfecting your craft and failing and not being terribly good, but obviously getting a lot of practice, a lot of exposure to some of the headliners. For instance, when Fred and Adele were performing, they saw people like Bill Bojangles Robinson, who was a great influence on Fred's tap style. And so they spent a lot of time, Fred in particular, watching in the wings these sort of acts and practicing their own, of course. And they spent an awful lot of time in small-time vaudeville and opening the bill, which was the least enviable spot, called the doormat, where the audience would still be coming in, they'd be talking, they'd be settling into their seats, and you really had to grab their attention very quickly or you just failed miserably.
The doormat. And I guess the very last, you know, you would think the top of the bill would be good, but I mean, I guess the very last spot was also not such a good spot.
That's right. It was, I think, about number 5 or 6 in a bill of 8 were the best spots, where they put the real headliners, the Sophie Tuckers and the Bill Robinsons, or Vernon and Irene Castle, who were the big ballroom sensations at the time. Fred and Adele were in their teens, and who influenced them hugely.
They saw them or played on the same bill with them?
I don't think they played on the same bill, but they certainly saw them and, to an extent, copied their style. And they were very graceful, lithe dancers, and Irene wore very lovely clothes, and Adele would try to copy these. And they were probably, in a way, almost bigger than Fred and Adele, Fred and Ginger, in the impact they had socially. Everybody copied their style in clothes, in hats, in shoes, in cigars, all sorts of things.
And of course, Fred Astaire famously played Vernon Castle along with Ginger Rogers in The Story of Vernon and Irene Castle. I think that was their last RKO picture together.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Well, they spent some time in vaudeville and then came to Broadway. How did that occur?
Yes, so after, as I say, about 12 years on the vaudeville circuit, gradually clawing their way up to the best spots on the bill, they were finally seen by, Charles Dillingham, who was a great theatre producer at the time and who wanted them. But before that, they actually got a booking with the Schubert Brothers, and this was to be in a show called Over the Top in 1917, so it was the year America entered the First World War, so it had a big sort of military theme. But it was very much over the top for them. It was launching them into Broadway, and they were engaged just as a specialty act with a couple of dancers. And from there, they went into another Schubert show, had a little bit more to do, and then were picked up by Dillingham, who really helped to mold their career and gave them speaking parts and introduced them to all the swells around New York, where they performed some of their dances at parties and were taken up by the sort of social aristocracy as well.
And I guess, like Jimi Hendrix, many years later, it was when they became stars in England that they really became stars at home.
Yes, indeed. They went to London in 1923 and were a huge sensation.
Was that with the George Gershwin show?
It was not a full Gershwin show. It had Gershwin numbers in it, but it would be another year or two before they performed in the very first Gershwin show by George and Ira Gershwin, writing the music and lyrics. And they, I think it was because partly the war was not all that long over, and they just brought this sort of new world optimism and joyfulness to London, which was a great antidote to the post-war ennui that people were suffering from. And so the London critics went crazy, using all sorts of biblical analogies to describe their coming. You know, nothing like them since the flood was how one paper described them. And I think it really was this, what F. Scott Fitzgerald, in describing America, said, it's a willingness, it's the heart. It was this joyfulness and optimism and youthfulness and sweetness that they exuded that really caught on.
Well, your book, The Astaires, does such a wonderful job of kind of putting us in the audience of their show. But I'm curious, I mean, I don't think there's anybody living who probably could have seen them on stage in London in 1924. How were you able to find out what it was all about?
Well, yes, I think anyone who did see them on stage, I think their numbers must be pretty scarce now. They've had to be very young. But fortunately, in Boston in particular, is a huge archive donated partly by Adele herself and partly by Fred's daughter, Ava. Wonderful repository of costumes they wore in vaudeville, including Fred's first tailcoat, and their mother, Anne, who really was responsible for their early career, managing it and caring for them and getting them bookings. She kept meticulous scrapbooks detailing everything about the acts they did and reviews they got and all the write-ups in the papers. And then Adele herself recorded a number of interviews, unpublished audio interviews. So there was hours of fascinating listening, and this was just a year or two before she died in 1981. And her recall was extraordinary of those years, and she would even sing snatches of songs that she sang on stage back in the 20s with Fred.
Oh, how lucky you were to hear all that.
Yes, it was a marvelous sort of feeling that I was transported almost back to that time and place. And the other thing was their correspondence. And I always think there's something very moving about looking at handwritten letters instead of just transcripts, and you really feel a sort of connection to the person and what they were feeling on when they were writing that letter years and years ago. So having those sorts of resources was a wonderful help. And, of course, I was in touch with Fred's daughter, who was very close to her father and to her aunt for many years. So that was another wonderful first-hand source.
We're talking with Kathleen Riley, and her book is called The Astaires, Fred and Adele. Tell me a little bit about their relationship with each other. Were they, well, you know, I mean, we've heard a lot about teams like Martin and Lewis and Abbott and Costello, even Laurel and Hardy. Didn't particularly get along all that well, but they were forced together. But here, these two actually were brother and sister. What was their relationship like?
Well, they sort of don't conform to type in showbiz partnerships, perhaps, in that they were very close brother and sister and had a very happy relationship, which was apparently unmarred by any sort of jealousy or resentment. Fred always did feel something of a liability to Adele because she was the one with this immediate star quality, and he felt he was you know, a bit of a detriment. But he didn't resent that. He just thought, well, I've got to work harder. She, on the other hand, thought he was the creative brains behind the partnership. He, especially when he was a little bit older, he was responsible for choosing a lot of the music and choreographing routines for them. And later, when she retired, of course, and he went almost directly to Hollywood, she didn't resent his career. I think she did miss the footlights and the world of showbiz, but she really rejoiced in his later career. So there was a mutual pride and admiration. The one thing, though, she was quite a possessive sister, and I think resented any time spent apart, and did want to be the most important person in his life.
When Fred found a woman that he wanted to marry, was that rough going?
It was, partly because she was going through a divorce at the time and had a young son, so he was also fighting a custody battle. So there were all those sort of complications. But probably the real stumbling block for him was that both his mother and his sister didn't approve of his choice. And I think that might have been the case with anyone he'd chosen, that they were quite possessive people where Fred was concerned. And both, because they'd been such a close-knit trio for all those years and completely dependent on one another, so that when they were all grown up and going their separate ways to a large extent, that did create a lot of tension.
But now, you mentioned that Fred went almost directly to Hollywood, but not without first struggling on Broadway in The Gay Divorce. Was Fred resentful of trying to make it on his own without Adele?
Well, I think he was quite ambivalent about it. He wanted to get on and prove himself in his own right, and was quite ambitious and driven in that respect. But on the other hand, he really didn't like his chances and thought that Adele would be much missed, which she was. And so when he did The Gay Divorce, and the critics said things like, two Astaires are better than one, or that Mr. Astaire appears to look off into the wings every so often and hope that his titled sister would come and rescue him. So that was pretty rough going. But he got through that, and again, I think going to London with the show helped in that. That's probably the first time when critics start to see him as a romantic leading man, and something, a new quality coming through. And that, of course, was the show in which he danced Night and Day, which famously he reprised with Ginger on film.
Right. It's amazing how many great songwriters wrote songs for Fred Astaire, Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and George Gershwin. And Gershwin was a good friend of both Fred and Adele, and you say something in your book about George Gershwin's sexuality, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, it seems, from what I can tell, to be fairly unique testimony of Adele's, that she would have liked a relationship with him, but that he was not given to women, not given to men either, that he was impotent and very much committed to his work, and that this may have been what caused his brain tumor. Adele always was quite outspoken and had very strong opinions, but certainly they were longtime friends, the Astaires and the Gershwins. Fred first met George when George was a song plugger for Remix and music publishers, when they were both about 14, 15, and they had a mutual admiration. Gershwin was quite a good dancer and Fred quite a good jazz pianist, so they used to swap roles quite often, and George would dance while Fred played the piano.
Really?
And and in fact, George, who used to play piano for them during rehearsals, often used to make choreographic suggestions, and, you know, if they were stuck on a particular step, often a connecting step, he would make a little suggestion that was, you know, quite apposite and well received.
I want to ask about Fred Astaire's autobiography. You mentioned in your book that you found a draft of his autobiography that was quite different than the one that was published.
Well, he did write it himself in longhand, and the manuscript is at the University of Southern California, and what's there is a lot of the material that was cut from it, so the more unedited version. And some of that material is quite revealing of his attitudes, particularly in relation to Adele. And it's in some of that unpublished material that you see just how much he thought of himself as the second fiddle in the act, that this feeling of being a detriment to his sister. And in fact, there was a notice they got early on in Vaudeville, where the critic had said, well, the girl has talent, but the boy can do nothing. And he apparently carried this around with him for years and obsessed over it. And again, it was this sort of drive behind his perfectionism and his love of rehearsal.
A legend carrying around a bad review. It's very strange, isn't it? Well, of course, there are a lot of marvelous recordings of Fred and Adele. The soundtrack that were, I guess they were recorded in London, of the Lady Be Good songs, and then there's the Bandwagon soundtrack also. But there's no film.
No, there's a little snippet on a newsreel from 1930, which shows them briefly on stage with the great Florin Ziegfeld, the producer, and Marilyn Miller, who was a big Broadway star at the time. And they were appearing together in a show called Smiles, which was very inaptly named because it was probably the biggest flop of their career. And we just get this sort of 10-second snippet of Fred and Adele shuffling onto the stage and off again in a sort of mock rehearsal for Smiles.
How frustrating.
And, yeah, that, as far as we know, is about it. But I think in a way it would almost be anticlimactic to see them. I'm sort of happy to keep the mystique in a way.
Well, I guess, you know, there's generations and generations of performers that, for whom performance was an ephemeral thing, that it wasn't preserved. It was on stage for those people who were in the audience, and that was it. And I guess that's Fred and Adele, right?
Yeah, and I think the funny thing, although it is very much an ephemeral art, it's amazing just how much of an impact live theatre can make on the individual memory and the sort of collective consciousness. And for years after their career, they were something of a legend, Broadway legend, but of course eclipsed by Fred and Ginger, and that's the real partnership that people remember, thanks to film, of course.
Well, this book is called The Astaires, Fred and Adele, and the author is Kathleen Riley. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Gary.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next time. I want to thank my guest, Kathleen Riley. Her book, The Astaires, Fred and Adele. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.